you know. So I came back, and you know, we established our residence. We got an apartment at the Highmont Apartments. Now the Highmont is actually it's on Fifth Avenue, almost at the corner of Shady. There are two buildings there. There's a building on the corner. We're talking about the south side of the street. No, it's not that one. It's on Fifth going right further on. Towards Shady. Yeah, it's right on Fifth going. There's two buildings there, 6200 and 6204. We were in 6204. It was a studio apartment. You know, the couches were beds that, you know, you made them. So we'd have to push the beds together, you know. I guess you didn't have to. I thought we were newlyweds. Her parents, of course, lived up in Squirrel Hill, and they were in the, I guess, the Forbes Terrace apartments. And that was her dad was Samuel Adler, and her mother was Sadie. S-A-D-Y-E. And he had been the first druggist in Squirrel Hill. Yes. It was the Phillips Pharmacy at the corner of Phillips and Murray. He was not a pharmacist. That's why I said druggist. Oh, absolutely. And I always used to say to Natalie, I was always so envious, and she'll remind people of this all the time, because I always sort of wanted to be a soda jerk myself, and there she got a chance to do that. She made all those sundaes and milkshakes and things like that. And her Sam Adler ended up employing almost every guy in Squirrel Hill to make deliveries for him. You know, they had their bicycles, and the kids would bicycles and make all kinds of deliveries of everything, whatever it is you wanted, including a 3-cent stamp.
You said he was not a pharmacist?
He was not a pharmacist.
He just opened this pharmacy.
He had to hire a pharmacist to be there in order to have a pharmacy there. Now, there was a drug store.
What year was this? Do you remember when he opened it? I mean, was it the first?
I would say it was after he married his my mother-in-law, and they got married like in 1928. He was older, at that time he worked for Rick McJunkin, the milk company. In fact, that's how he got his nickname. He was called Milky Adler because of that. And he was a real confirmed bachelor back in those days. One of his best friends was Ralph Sugar. You know, and they had the traditional card game and so forth and so on. But there were a bunch of young people. And in fact, I have a big picture down in the basement right now I could show you of the old Summer Outing Association, of all these Jewish guys who got together and had, you know, this club. So how he got into the business, it had to be somewhere, I would say, around the early 30s.
It's interesting for somebody that's not a pharmacist to open a pharmacy.
Yeah. Well, it was primarily a drugstore, and you had to have the pharmacy, I think, if you wanted. You know, you could sell all kinds of patent medicines and things, but the soda fountain was a big part of it, and my mother-in-law worked with him in the business, I don't know how much Natalie recounted this as part of her tape, because I've never heard her tape, so we're probably overlapping a little, and all I know is, of course,
it's wonderful, though, that you're both being interviewed, or that you both have been interviewed.
I don't know. If you say so. I mean, I'm honored to
be special.
Yeah,
he is too.
Yeah, no, we do different things, but we do the different things together.
If
yeah, and
the. So anyhow, you went up to the residence at Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, that's where I was, and I finished my senior year. Okay, I got out of school in June, and I knew, of course, I was going to be drafted imminently. So what happened then is we closed up the apartment and we took Natalie's old bedroom at Forbes Terrace, which is right across from the Ikes, the Irene Kaufman Center, which was in an old house at that time.
They were just the two children, right?
Yeah, her brother, who at when I graduated,
June of 1953,
exactly. Let's tell you something special about that graduation.
Okay.
It was special for my mother-in-law. Okay. And I could probably show you a picture of it. There's probably one available someplace. But the year when we of our graduation, and when Natalie got her Master's of Education, I got my Bachelor of Laws. Her brother got his Bachelor of Arts degree. He was accepted into medical school for the next year. And her uncle, Eli Goldstein, who was a bachelor, a physician, a urologist, this is a guy that never wanted to stop learning. And he was back in college taking graduate courses and got his master's degree I take it back. He got his bachelor's degree also. Mind you, this is a man who was already an MD, but in those days, you could go on and get your MD or your DDS, as the case may be, because this is what happened with his brother, Henry Goldstein.
What was the uncle's name? Was
Eli W. No. This is the oldest of the six Goldstein children. My mother-in-law being the third oldest of the group. No. She was the second oldest.
So he went on to, even with his MD.
Yes. Even though he got an MD, you didn't have to get a bachelor's degree. So he went back to at least get his bachelor's degree. He did subsequently go on and get his master's degree at a later time and was all but dissertation on his PhD when he died in the 60s.
That was my next.
In the 60s.
So he always
right. And he was a bachelor, and that was it. Yeah, but whatever organization he'd be, and he was very involved in B'nai B'rith also.
I think the whole family, no?
Yeah, and of course, Henry, to perpetuate Eli's memory, started his own B'nai B'rith Lodge and named it the Eli Goldstein Lodge.
That was his brother.
So then you moved on to Charlottesville?
Well, I got drafted and went through the whole routine, and ultimately that we talked about. Natalie was living at home, in effect, at that point, and continuing to teach at Frick in this nursery school. And at that time, the woman who was the head teacher, who was another Jewish lady, and hadn't been married. She was really I guess you would have said that she was well on the way to becoming a spinster, or whatever that word was in those days. Just as Natalie's other two aunts ultimately did become, Jean and Lil, the other sisters here in this extravaganza. We have these six Goldsteins, who Eli being the oldest.
Was your mother-in-law the only Goldstein that married?
And this Ann Ahrens, who was down in Washington, D.C. They were the only ones, and all the others did not. So what you had was,
Your mother-in-law was the only one?
And Ann Ahrens, but she never had any children. Mm-hmm. So you had Eli, and you had Ann, and then you had Sadie. Then you had Jean, and then you had Henry, and then you had Lil. Henry went on to become a dentist. In fact, he was a year or two behind my father, but he was some kind of a prodigy. He was there really. He got out and became a dentist, I think, when he was 21, something like that. You could combine your dental degree along with your... and you didn't get a bachelor's degree then. either in those days. You went 4 years and you became a dentist.
From the beginning?
From the beginning.
And was that the same with medical?
And evidently you could do that in medical school too. You may have gone to undergraduate school for a year or two, maybe 2 years. That was it. Then you switched and you went to medical school for another 4 years. I think that's about the way it went.
I think they still have something like that.
Something like it. In fact, you can also get it.
Without a degree?
Without a bachelor's degree, you could go and get your a medical degree. You can't do that anymore, but that's the way you could do it then. And you could do that right after the war, too, I remember.
Law school, too?
I couldn't have done that in law school.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mm-mm. But med school, they did them
now. Yeah, yeah. The law school, of course, was 1 year less. Mm-hmm.
So Natalie did join you in the service.
Yeah, what happened was I got to Charlottesville to get back there. I told you it would be at least 15 minutes later. It was much later.
Before you get to that, you said that you moved out of your apartment on Fifth Avenue.
To their home at Forbes Terrace, right across the street.
In-laws home.
Right across from the Irene Kaufman Center. I mean right across the street. Their number in Forbes Terrace was 5739. The Irene Kaufman Center's number is 5738. Forbes Avenue.
That was until you were drafted.
Yes. And as it turned out, well, of course, I had to study for the bar exam, mm-hmm. which I did. And a lot of the guys went to Philadelphia to study and take the course there. But I, being married and having, and Natalie, of course, working. Because I don't know if I said this to you, the joke we always used to tell for the reason why I got married was I had certain qualifications that you had to have before I would take you as my bride. That was, you had to have a job, and you had to have a parking space in Oakland. So she qualified. So that's why we all really got married during law school.
She joined you in Charlottesville.
Yeah, I found an apartment there that was owned by a lady, and it was like a garden apartment. It was actually a basement apartment, if the truth be known, but it was very nice. And I was there for three months taking this course at the Judge Advocate General School. And those were really happy times. All of us that were there were all in the same boat. Obviously, none of us had ever been in the service before. Because there were fairly strict admission requirements, these were all pretty bright people that you had a right to be associated with.
Did you go through boot camp with these people?
No.
So that was a different experience.
All different people from all over the United States. We became particularly friendly with three other couples. One couple were the handmakers from Louisville, Kentucky. Stu was from Louisville. His wife, Muriel, was from California, and they met because he went to Stanford Law School. Now, his other... he had another couple that he was friendly with, Sandy and John O'Connor, and they had gone to Stanford also, so he knew them. Although I'm not sure where John was from originally, but Sandy was from Phoenix, Arizona. There was another couple, the Dwyers, and they were Californians also. And so the four couples of us, during these 3 months that we were there, we got together almost every evening. And we'd play bridge, and we'd play charades, which was another fun thing to do. And inevitably, during the course of the evening, they would, the hostess would serve and so forth. And we would have coffee, and no, for some reason, no one would ever take any cream or sugar in their coffee except me. You know, I'm not sure why I was, seemed that they were more distinctive than me, because everyone used cream and sugar in those days. And but that at that time, I figured, well, if I'm not going to make the host just bring out this stuff for me when no one else required it. So to this very day, I no longer use cream or sugar in my coffee. Yeah. And, Yeah, right.
Well, I was pregnant and I was getting too heavy.
Well, so none of those good reasons.
Said you were having too much, so I quit the sugar.
Yeah. Well, that was, but that was the reason. Just I didn't feel it was fair to make them go through all of that.
Did you have studies to do at night?
Absolutely not. It was terrific. Oh. You would think that we did, and I'm sure it seems that we just were able to cover the materials during the day and.
Specifically for that
book. Yeah, well, we were all being trained generally to be a judge advocate general officer, which meant that, and there were all kinds of stuff you could do as this. So, you know, but we learned how to try a court-martial case or defend a court-martial. The manual for court-martial was a primary text, which is basically criminal justice in the Army. We got admitted to the Court of Military Appeals. We went to Washington on one occasion and got sworn in there. I have that certificate someplace. I've never put it up on my wall. And where it is, I'm really not sure. It's one of the few things I never got framed, I think. Or maybe I did get a frame, but I don't know where it is. Obviously, I didn't think it was too important after I got out. So it ended up when I chose, after I'd been an enlisted man now for 3.5 months when the commission came through. I went in the middle of September, and it was like the first week of January. And you had to sign on for 3 years. See, if I'd stayed as an enlisted man, at the end of 2 years, two full years, 3.5 months of which I already had in, I would have been out. But I just thought the experience of being able to be in as an officer and being married, it would be a much nicer thing. And it did turn out. I have no regrets for having done that.
You stayed in her home.
I stayed in. I got out in, I got like a 10 or 20 early day discharge. I got out in December of 1996. 96, I mean 56. What am I talking about? 1956.
Like yesterday.
Yeah, just like yesterday.
You went in for 2 days.
I went, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I waited. Yeah, it was a really good experience. But I got to meet these great people. Okay.
Did you stay in touch with these people?
Okay, this is a very good question. And what happened in... while we were there, you know, we would travel together. I remember once we went down to... from Charlottesville, we went to Williamsburg. We had never been to Williamsburg before. We went to Richmond and saw how they made Chesterfield cigarettes, you know. In fact, while I was in the service, I'd never really smoked when I graduated. Speaking of cigarettes, when I went into the Army, I think I could count the exact number of cigarettes I'd ever smoked in my lifetime. I mean, I was able to mentally keep track of all of that. And, that's when I went off to college, let's put it that way. And when not in the Army. In college, I did start to take up smoking and smoked a pipe 1 year. And when so I was smoking like 6 packs a week, not a pack a day quite. And then when I went into the Army, you could get cigarettes really cheap at the commissary, and because there was no federal tax on them because it was going to people in the military. But I decided, I remember it was Rosh Hashanah of 1954, I was going to make a New Year's resolution. I was going to give up smoking.
That's interesting, because at that time there was no...
There was.
There was?
There was. They were talking about cigarettes giving you cancer.
Yeah.
And the way that you got the cancer at those days, this was the theory, was the The burning of the paper created some kind of a carcinogen. It had nothing to do with the tobacco. They talked about paper, and the burning was could maybe give you cancer. That's as far as it went. For me, it was a little bit of a nuisance. I found this, I was burning holes in my, you know, and it was sort of disgusting. But Natalie would have a cigarette every once in a while after dinner or something like that. She never inhaled. I mean, she and Clinton can both see.
So you gave it up for Russia?
I decided I was going to give it up for New Year's, and I did. And I never smoked again. I'd have a cigar once in a while, but I didn't inhale. But it just seemed to... What?
You weren't smoking pipe then either.
No, gave that up too. And actually, the main time when I smoked a pipe was my junior year in college. In fact, the younger kids in the fraternity always remember me as the pipe-smoking brother. You know, that was sort of part of the routine that I'd be identified with. So I gave up smoking in the Army. And as I say, we made these friends. And in fact, the handmakers, who we were very close to, they already had their future all mapped up for themselves. Stu was going to go, he was literally an orphan. Well, no, his mother was still living. His mother had remarried, but his father, who had passed away, he had an uncle back in Louisville who was a fairly prominent lawyer, and his plan was, as soon as he finished his military service, he was going back to Louisville and be in his father's, his uncle's firm. And I had no idea what I was going to do. I figured I was going to go back to Pittsburgh, probably, or probably not Uniontown, maybe Washington, PA, get a job as a lawyer. So the handmakers gave us the idea. We were sort of given a chance to pick where we wanted to go.
Really?
Yeah, and if they could accommodate us, they would. I remember a couple of lawyers who really had terrible allergy problems, and they really wanted to go to New Mexico so they could be away from all kinds of the stuff that we're doing. And they got assigned to a place in New Mexico. The O'Connors, I remember, they wanted to go to Europe, and we thought very seriously about that. It was a chance to go and see the world, so to speak. They went to Germany. The handmakers, though, they wanted to go to Washington.
Well, they weren't the ones who wanted to go to Louisville.
Well, they were going to go there eventually, but for their military assignment, they wanted to go, and they knew where they were going, they what office they wanted to be in, and I don't know how Stu was so focused, but they also even had a place where they were prepared to live. They had the apartment, so we just sort of just tagged along. So I went to Washington, and I got a terrific assignment. Stu went into the military affairs section, which is sort of a civilian, well, not a civilian. It's sort of a non-criminal, when I'm saying civilian, I meant civil. The civil part of military law, having to do with regulations and complying with certain military regulations. He went into the division that interprets those regulations and issues opinions as to what's the proper way to do this, to get from X to Y and so forth and so on. I mean, it was, that kind of stuff didn't really appeal to me. But I got into what was called the Legal Assistance Division, and it was very small. There was a Byrd colonel who was in charge of it, and as opposed to a lieutenant colonel, that's the rank right below the brigadier general. And all of these people are lawyers, of course. And there was another first lieutenant in that office. And I came in. I was now a first lieutenant. And there were just three of us. We had a couple secretaries. And what we did is we had the responsibility of answering inquiries of all the some 350 Army legal assistance offices, every post in the world had a legal assistance officer. And this person was supposed to help people with their purely non-military legal problems. The biggest one of which was probably getting powers of attorney for the folks back home to act on their behalf, for getting wills written, getting them help with their income taxes, and sometimes immigration problems because they'd meet girls and want to bring them back, you know, from other countries and so forth and so on. So we became sort of the experts in those areas, and we ran basically an office practice of law. So not only did we do this and try to get all the information to be helpful out to all of the 350 offices in the field, we became the law office for all the lawyers in the Pentagon. I mean, for all the people in the Pentagon. And so all the military people who had to have a problem, they'd come to us, and we had an office practice of law. We'd help them write their wills and do all of these other things. The local taxing authorities would try to tax them, and of course they would be exempt, and we had to give them tell them how to do that. Sometimes they come in, they want to get divorces. We'd have to refer them out to civilian lawyers, you know, to help them with that. And that's the kind of things we did. And I did that for a couple years.
So anything outstanding? You remember?
I guess the fun thing that comes to mind, I remember because I did develop this expertise in tax. I took some graduate courses at George Washington University in taxation. I went to the Internal Revenue Service, which was located, obviously, right in Washington, took special training there. And so I would go and see a lot of the big generals in the Pentagon, help them with their returns. And I guess one of the things that was really outstanding was the day I got a call from the White House. And they wanted me to come over and assist the president's physician, who was a military person. This was Eisenhower. He was the president at the time. And, of course, he was ex-military, and his personal physician was ex-military physician, to help him with his tax return. Well, I never did meet him. He was a colonel. I never did meet him, but I worked with his aide, who was a WAC. Okay?
She.
Okay. Women's Army Corps. Women's Army Corps. She was captain. I was a first lieutenant. And I remember they're sending a car over, pick me up, take me to the White House. The White House.
Just help with the...
Oh, I'm sorry. And so that was sort of a fun thing that I remember. As I say, from time to time, you know, we never saw him. Got a tour of the White House, sort of, you know, of the public area and things. I saw the full medical dispensary that's there for the president. That was impressive. No, I did not get to shake Eisenhower's hand. Another interesting years later, when I was back, I guess I was already a judge at this point. In fact, I know I was, which of course we got to get lead up to eventually, yes. But I just want to mention in the context that I've already told this to you. I'm looking at a newspaper one morning, and I'm looking at the picture on the front page of President Reagan's most recent Supreme Court appointee, Sandra Day O'Connor. So I'm looking at the picture, and I get on the phone with Natalie. I says, Natalie, I says, remember when we were in the Army, and our friends John and Sandy O'Connor. Yeah, I says, Natalie, that's Sandra Day O'Connor. Absolutely. So that was a very pleasant coincidence. Now, we never had much contact with each other after, but I did subsequently contact her. I wrote to John. Okay, he was my colleague in school, and I congratulated him on Sanders' appointment by President Reagan. And he wrote me back, and he says, well, obviously, he knew how expert she was at charades, so that so she certainly deserved the appointment. Of course, by then she had been a justice of the Arizona Supreme Court and had served in that capacity as well. But I think it's an interesting coincidence. And I did go. I saw where she was going to be speaking at a meeting of the American Bar Association in Chicago. And I was going there as well because I